Good evening. I'd like to call the June 19th, 2012 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Roll call of members.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera has asked to be excused. Ms. Robertson?
Here.
12 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
Thank you. I'd like to start tonight with Leslie McBean Claiborne coming up to the microphone for our Distinguished Youth Award.
Say that four times fast.
I know. Leslie McBean Claiborne. Sorry about that. On the table there.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'll try that again.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening.
Ooh, I know it's hot out, but you know. Come on now. It is my honor this month to award the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award. As most of you know, this is an award that recognizes and honors young people in our community who are doing great work, who are aspiring to be, or who are role models to their peers, or aspiring to be successful in whatever it is that they do. And so on that note, I want to call Ms. Kimberly Webb to come join me up here, and I'll tell her mother to come join me, too. Come on up. And while they're coming, I'll tell you some about Kimberly. Kimberly was nominated for this award by the associate principal of Ithaca High School, Samantha Little. So, this is Kimberly, and this is Kimberly's twin. I'll read some of the letter. It says, it is with great pleasure that I write this endorsement for Ms. Kimberly Webb, a senior at Ithaca High School. Ms. Webb is a very sincere, thoughtful, and caring young lady. She went on to say, Ms. Webb not only contributes to her school community by participating in various clubs, such as the African Latino Club, but also her local community through her work at Wegmans, Kendall, at the Kendall Senior Residence, and volunteering at a number of organizations. Kimberly is graduating tomorrow? No, two days from now? Thursday. Yay! Yeah. From Ithaca High School, and she will be attending TC3 in the fall of 2012 to study nursing. Yay, TC3. Additionally, she intends to attend a four-year university to study social work. Kimberly has had the honor of receiving several community accolades, including the Delta Sigma Theta Penalva Award, Wegmans Food Store Award for 4 years, and I was at an award ceremony last night, and there were many other things that I can't even remember to mention all, but she's been doing great stuff. All in all, Ms. Kimberly Webb is a wonderful young woman who is very deserving of the many accolades she has received. She's an enthusiastic and driven student, earning a GPA of 3.46. Get it, girl. I did not just take this. I went on to ask some other folks about Kimberly to tell me about her. Here are some of the things they said, including her sister, who could not be here. They said, Kimberly has a good balance of a strong personality and humility. They said she's always open to encouraging others and to help them succeed. Since middle school, she wanted to be a nurse, and she did anything and everything she can possibly do to get to her dreams of being a nurse, which made her take the job at Kendall for one. She's a leader among her peers, helping and motivating fellow students to stay on track towards graduation. That's a biggie. She's in school, pulling a 3.46, working two jobs, and volunteering in her community. This young lady is doing great work. Whatever she sets her mind to comes to fruition. That's the kind of motivation. Ask Kimberly's mom to come up here as well, because she's also deserving of definitely some accolade. She's a single mom. She's raised two beautiful and talented and amazing and committed community service-minded young ladies. They migrated to the U.S. about 12 years ago, and since then has been very involved in our community. So ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Ms. Kimberly Webb as our June 2012 Tompkins County Distinguished Youth.
Thank you.
So Kimberly, here is a plaque that's presented to the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award, presented to you, Kimberly Webb. In recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, June 2012, it is sponsored by Bangs Ambulance Service, Tompkins County Legislature, that's these folks around the table, and Yander, the Cayuga Raider Group, Purity Ice Cream, A&B Awards, and Engraving. And we always have a little bag of goodies from all our sponsors for you. That one is for your mom.
Thank you so much for coming, Kimberly. Thank you, Leslin. We have public privilege to the floor. I have a number of people signed up. We have a 3-minute time limit. Please pay attention to Kathy over here. She has a little sign to hold up and help you know what that time limit is. If anybody would like to speak after we've gone through this, people have signed up, you can certainly take a turn then. I've got Doug Britton and then Krista Bissell.
Hi, I'm here to speak on the Pine Tree Road PAS project. Somebody clearly wants to replace the railroad overpass bridge on Pine Tree Road, and I'm not sure who it is, and I'm not sure why they want to do it. Cornell hasn't publicly said that they wanted to replace it. They said that their interest was the multimodal aspect of this project, the bike and the pedestrian trails. The other people have expressed similar sentiment. They like the bike and pedestrian trails, and their interest in a new bridge is only to the extent that it serves the bike and pedestrian needs. It serves a supporting role. But if you look closely at this project, the bridge replacement does not, in fact, serve a supporting role for the bike and ped paths. It does nothing at all for the new paths. And the shoulder of the road, the plan calls for 5-foot shoulders. There is already room under that overpass for 5-foot shoulders. As if you look at the email that we sent you yesterday, it has a picture of me holding it. It's big enough. So as far as I can tell, the main purpose of replacing that bridge to get the road wider is to make room for extending the turn lane on Route 366 back underneath. Now, this project is federal transportation enhancement funding, which is not supposed to be used in the travel lanes. So actually building the turn lane can't be done as part of this project. So what the project calls for is making room for the turn lane, and then after the feds disappear and aren't looking, then you can turn it into a turn lane. I mean, come on, that's cheating. Even if the feds aren't watching that closely, we are. Sorry. The main effect, I think, of replacing that bridge is to, it's so expensive, is to suck money from the other parts of the project. It's not necessary. I think if you deleted the bridge, you'd be better off. You'd have surplus budget, but if you include replacing the bridge, now you're under budget, which brings you up to the resolution that you have in front of you. Unfortunately, the resolution commits you to replacing the bridge if you get the funding. Now, the amount of money you're asking for is less than the amount of the cost to build the bridge and the abutments and the traffic control, so you wind up farther in the hole if you go through with this. Your surplus disappears, you end up with just barely enough to do everything, including replacing the bridge. Don't do it. I mean, you're better off not getting the money that has the strings attached. I mean, if you are committed, if you really want extra money, and if you want to apply to extend a path to East Hill Plaza, fine, go ahead. But I would recommend don't commit to building a bridge. It isn't worth it. Thank you very much.
Krista Bissell, and then Will Futterman.
Hi, I'm Krista Bissell. I'm from 137 Pine Tree Road. I'd just like everybody on Pine Tree to raise their hands so we don't all have to get up and speak, waste the time. I'm going to read two short statements, one I read to the Facilities and Infrastructure meeting. This project, which was originally set forth as a bicycle and pedestrian path, has as its most costly item the replacement of the old railroad overpass bridge. The bridge is a solid structure that has many years of life left. The main reason for replacement is to improve traffic flow, which is far from the main goal of the project, a path for bikers and hikers. Now it seems that more money is needed to complete the bridge aspect of this project. At the public meeting, we were told that our concerns about the safety and livability of the southern end could not be addressed at this time because there were no funds available. It would appear that that is not the case. You are now discussing a new grant with more funds to be used for the bridge construction. How can the residents of this community believe that you are looking out for our interests when you are willing to find more money for the bridge and not to support the much-needed traffic calming on the other end of Pine Tree Road? I would ask that you complete the project of installing the bike and pedestrian path without the removal and rebuilding of the bridge, and that you begin to address our concerns and find other available money to address traffic calming on the southern end. And I have one other question statement I would like to make. And it says, we have been told that the Pine Tree Road project is for the safety of those walking and biking in the area. I would like to know if it has been determined that there is an actual safety issue in the area for bikers and walkers. Are these studies, traffic accident reports available that indicate this problem? I would like to point out that there have been numerous reports indicating that the southern end of Pine Tree Road has excessive speeding and a higher level of accidents than most roads in the county, and addressing the safety in that area is long overdue. So if there are funds that are available, it seems that they should be used in the area that needs safety. Thank you.
Will Futterman, and then Jennifer Dodson.
Thank you. My name is Will Futterman.
I'm sorry, Will.
That's okay. It's a commonly mispronounced name, and my father, Irving Futterman, who passed away in 1993, on rare occasions he would just be moved to say one of those curse words, and had he lived to see the decision in the Citizens United case by the current U.S. Supreme Court, I think he may have let loose with one of those words. He would have called it a bad and unfair decision. Now, it's my understanding that there's a resolution being put forward, I believe by Dooley Kiefer, that would go along with resolutions that are being passed all over the country that have the intention of amending the U.S. Constitution. It's a big thing to do, and it's necessary if we want to have a fair playing field. And anything like a democracy in this country, because it's really, if we don't do this, transnational corporations, the wealthiest people in the world, and they could be in Saudi Arabia, they could be anywhere, energy companies could continue to so skew the information that gets to voters, so that if all of us write letters to the editor, because we know the people who are running for Congress in this area, and we have reasons to support the people we want to vote for, we could get overwhelmed by attack ads after attack ads, complete insanity coming from God knows who, very wealthy interests who 2 years ago, when it wasn't a presidential year, you know, I mean, I have charts here. It'd be interesting for you folks to see the amount of money that was spent just in 2010. And, you know, unions also have an ability, but 14 to 1, the big corporations outspent unions in 2010. It's going to be bigger this year. I think in the interest of fairness, in the interest and the possibility of democracy in North America and ordinary citizens having any kind of say, I think everywhere across the country, bodies like this, citizens need to stand up and say, nope, the U.S. Supreme Court created bad law. It wasn't based on real precedent, and it doesn't work for the citizens of this country to have a fair democratic system. So I'm hoping that this body will make a vote tonight to help overturn the notion that corporations are human beings. They're not. They're legal fictions. We know that. They have rights. Maybe they don't have rights. They have privileges. Human beings have rights. That's what's guaranteed by the Constitution. Anyway, there's a few more people who have some things to share on this topic, and I look forward to listening to them. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Will Feudeman. Jennifer Dodson, and then Amanda Manfredo.
Hello. I won't take a lot of your time because I understand how it is to have a busy agenda. A few months ago, the City Common Council, City of Ithaca Common Council, weighed in on this. I understand that it's not an issue that city or the county has full control of, but it is really important, and it's important when we see issues that that are beyond our scope but have a huge impact on our work here in Tompkins County, for my case in the city of Ithaca, that we weigh in on that. So I really hope, I appreciate that Dooley's put forward this resolution, and I hope that you're willing to consider it, and I hope that a majority of you vote for it, because this is an issue that has, having a reasonably level playing field, as well described, has an impact on the democracy of our county, as well as of our state, as well as of our nation. I would say that it's probably very close to the impact of one person, one vote, as we're dealing with redistricting. We're thinking about that really carefully. I hope you all are. I know we are at the city. These are really important, and this is the basis of our democracy. So I hope that you can support Dooley's resolution. This does not take away the entity of corporation. That's a very useful entity with appropriate privileges, and, of course, we need that in order for commerce and the nonprofit sector, and in order for our society to work, we need that concept. We don't need it to be equivalent to a human person. So good luck in your work tonight. Thanks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Amanda Manfredo, and then Victor Tiffany.
Good evening. I'm Amanda Manfredo. I'm at 1508 Danby Road, and I want to focus on two things. First, the difference between speech and conduct and how equal protection comes into play with this issue, and second, what the Constitution says about how elections are supposed to be carried out. One of our most cherished rights in this country is our right to free speech. And the question today is whether monetary contributions to political campaigns, candidates, parties, and advertisements constitute speech or conduct. Now, I can understand why the line between speech and conduct can get blurred. Sometimes speech is conduct. For instance, if you publish a book that describes how to turn your kitchen into a meth lab, you might be aiding and abetting a crime. Likewise, sometimes conduct is speech. There was once a street performer who painted himself up like an American flag and splashed around in a fluorescent orange fluid, and whatever this conduct was ineffectually trying to convey, it was protected as free speech. I propose that whether monetary expenditures are conduct or speech depends on whether it hurts somebody else. The flag guy in the tub was trying to make a statement, and he wasn't hurting anybody. The book about the meth lab may be highly informative, but it may also end up with people whose lives are ruined by meth addiction. Now, most of the money that's used in political campaigns is used to buy advertising. The thing about advertisements is they don't have to be true. Advertising once managed to convince a whole generation of Americans that smoke inhalation was healthy. Your doctor smokes. It's good for you. Advertising has a tendency to not be informative and is by its nature propaganda. They're not giving you objective information. They're selling you something so they can make more profit. It took a whole lot of cancer and a couple of generations to realize that people had been lied to. When unregulated political advertising can drown out the voices of research and of public folks that the government is supposed to serve, it's a harm to us, the public. This is why equal protection under the law should be part of this discussion. You should only be allowed to make political expenditures if no one is harmed by the result of those expenditures. Now, looking through the history of campaign finance law, one might think that it's something that's mostly settled in the courts. You hear about Buckley versus Valeo and maybe 20 other cases that are involved with this. But the Constitution says, Article 1, Section 4, the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations except as to the place of choosing senators. That means that the full power to regulate elections is in the hands of the legislative branch, a body full of people familiar with the electoral process and with the process of making rules. When the court strikes down certain parts of campaign finance regulation, they both legislate from the bench and they perform line item vetoes. So I'm asking you, my county legislative body, to pass the Dooley's comprehensive resolution before you tonight that abolishes corporate personhood and ends the doctrine that money is speech. Thank you.
Thank you. Victor Tiffany.
Victor Tiffany from Danby and coordinator for Move to Amend. Late last week, John McCain did have some things to say about Citizens United decision. He says it is, quote, the most misguided, naive, uninformed, egregious decision of the Supreme Court in the 21st century. I would hope that everyone, every legislator in this room tonight, votes for one of these two resolutions to deal with this horrible Supreme Court decision that has unleashed invisible dark money on our elections. And I want to address these two resolutions before you tonight using a Venn diagram. How often does someone show you one of these? The circle in the center, labeled MF, is the McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Reform Act that was overturned by Citizens United ruling. The second circle around it, number one, is one of the two resolutions that ask Congress to pass an amendment that basically is a beefed-up, partisan, great law, a wonderful campaign finance law out of Congress, but it's asking to put it in the Constitution. And you just don't do that with law. The Constitution is more fundamental. It's based on principles. So, Frank, I'm asking you specifically tonight as my representative, don't embarrass yourself by voting for this other restricted resolution. And more importantly, because you're our representative, don't embarrass your constituents by voting for that. Everyone else, I don't care what you vote for. I'm number one. But the larger one, the more comprehensive one that we've been speaking to, that addresses corporate personhood and money is speech, is important. It's very important that you vote for the bigger resolution so we hopefully can have a unanimous vote tonight. And we're going to be taking names because you all want to get elected, reelected, I would assume, and we're going to be active in the next political season. Now, I know I'm being blunt and I'm playing hardball, but this is a fundamental issue of ideas and ideals. The idea is money is not speech. That's absurd. It's ridiculous. And the ideal is presented in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. People were ordained by our creators with certain inalienable rights. People, not property, not charters, people. These are fundamental issues, and we hope that this grassroots movement coming through this body will reach Washington along with state resolutions from around the country, and we can get this country turned back away from the slow-motion coup d'etat that Citizens United has unleashed on us and make this, once again, a government of the people. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the legislature? Go ahead. State your name and where you live.
My name is George Kahneman. I live at 250 Strawberry Hill Circle. I'm really on my way to the planning board meeting. I've been a member of the planning board for about 10 years now. But I thought I'd stop here and reinforce what Bruce Britton said. I believe this is the sixth meeting that I've come to, that I have been to, that concerns Pine Tree Road and the pedestrian and the bike trails and the bridge. I don't think our public works staff or our elected officials have been listening to what has been said over those six meetings. I don't want to say that you were deaf to it, but at least when one woman at one of the meetings said, well, you all sort of agree on everything except the bridge, why don't we do all that and forget this bridge? Anyway, most people have spoken, have been concerned about the East Hill community, and I represent, I think, a different community, or in the same community as the people from Pine Tree Road. I should say that it's not necessary, as Bruce said, to do anything to that bridge to accomplish the objectives of having good bicycle paths and good pedestrian paths. Doing so is a waste of money, and it limits the funding, as I think he pointed out, for the pedestrian and the bike trails. If the bridge is retained, more funding will be available for paths and shoulders and maintenance of the trails. As Herb Eggman pointed out at a committee meeting yesterday, or whenever it was, time passes fast, that we need to maintain those trails and paths in addition to everything else, and also look at the connectivity of them. To spend $500,000, that's half a million the last time I looked at it, on a bridge that you don't need is ridiculous. Absolutely, positively ridiculous. I suggest that the county reps vote against the resolution, which I think they're going to have come up here, because I really believe that the existing bridge isn't that bad and doesn't solve the problem that we are here to solve. If someone wants a new bridge, let them pay for it out of their own funds. But I don't think we should spend public money to build a bridge that has no place there. The pedestrian trails, the connectivity of those, and the bike lanes are what we want to do, and we want to do them right. We want to do them in such a fashion that they are built to standards that we can meet, which I think some of you know better than I do. But I think that's very important to do that. I do want to thank Carol Chuck for having a meeting yesterday about this issue, even though I might disagree with her on how she voted. But I hope today you will vote this resolution down, and let's go back to the drawing board. We don't have to go very far and forget this ridiculous bridge. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak? Be next. Okay.
My name is Jim Scally at 940 Dryden Road, and I'm speaking here in support of withdrawing a particular property that's coming up for auction at 980 Dryden Road. It's the corner of Freeze Road and 366. The reason I'm speaking in favor of having it withdrawn from the auction is severalfold. One is that this property, first off, is that the town authorized 2 years ago a hamlet plan for Varna. Varna has been pushing for improvements in terms of new housing, new developments, and these kinds of things for probably about 10 years or more now. And finally, we've gotten to the point where the Hamlet Development Plan is just about ready to be adopted by the town board. This piece of property has several problems associated with it. One has been derelict and abandoned for 3 or 4 years, and therefore has no one has come in to purchase the property and make it whole again. Secondly, it has a line of sight problems for people coming up Freeze Road to turn on to 366. The line of sight is terrible. There have been a number of accidents there as well. So transportation part of that is a concern, and the town has indicated a willingness to acquire the property. They've only had since last week to consider this, and so the meeting this afternoon was such that it allowed for some negotiation to take place in terms of that. I'll be speaking to the town board on Thursday night to advocate again that they enter negotiations with the county to acquire the property, and basically to make the county whole for past taxes and so forth like that. So I'm hoping that the town will, or the legislature will agree to withhold this based on public interest in Varna. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Frank.
Martha, I know you don't usually permit us to engage in conversation with the public on, because this is public privilege of the floor, but I'd like to ask Mr. Scaly a question. Jim, that particular piece of property, are you speaking on behalf of the town to make a...
No, I'm speaking on behalf of the Varna residents. I've lived in Varna for over 15 years now. We've been working diligently with the community and the town to work on improvements along 366 in the Varna area. And we've had over 100 participants in reviewing documents and looking at this, and the consensus is that particular property would, having the town on acquiring it, would demolish the property and then attach it to whatever redevelopment process would be going on in that corner. So there is it kind of is the beginning of a process that the Hamlet Plan advocates, and so this is where the public interest comes into play.
Dooley is the chair of the Government Operations Committee, and I think the discussion about the foreclosures came up at that committee.
That's correct.
This afternoon. Do you know if the town made any sort of a formal proposal to withhold? Pat is saying yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That's not going to start a precedent. Okay. But, okay. Sir, you want to join us? Thanks, Frank. I think it was good to clarify that.
Hi, I'm Carl Fitzke, 202 Rachel Carson Way, Town of Ithaca. I wasn't really going to speak tonight, but I did recall one more thing I wanted to mention last time I was here when I was talking, and regarding corporate personhood. The efforts that we're all making to try and send a message to Washington here, it's not an anti-business sentiment. I just want to clarify that. I mean, I've had a small business myself. I've worked in small businesses. I've worked in large businesses. And it's really just a matter of restoring fairness, getting control back in the people's hands, and giving small business a fair shake in government too, and not having large enterprises steamroll our legislative processes in the country. So small business people don't have the kind of money to affect elections and lobbying in Washington that large businesses have. It's not an issue there, and it's actually, you know, my sentiments are with making the game a little fairer to small business as well as individual human beings, because that's ultimately what small businesses are, not giant entities that are much, much less personal. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right, before I go to legislative privilege of the floor, let me tell you what I think we'll do tonight. If we can just go through, I have a brief report, go through legislative privilege and my report, and then go to the redistricting issue, Dooley, if we could go to that, and then there are, actually, no, I think if we can go quickly through the consent agenda, I think the whole consent agenda will go quickly, but, and then if we can go through, we'll take redistricting out of order, and then go through the other committee reports. I realize that there are members of the public and staff here for tourism, hydrilla, cooperative extension, Pine Tree, and the airport. So we'll just go through in order and deal with resolutions so that people who are waiting for particular items can have it, you know. I mean, our whole meeting is, of course, important and fascinating, but in case you have somewhere else to be, then we'll try to be expeditious about these things. So we'll start with the first, actually. Is Jennifer still here?
No.
Okay. Is there any municipal official out there that would like to address the legislature? Okay. All right. Legislators, then. Brian.
Thanks. Yeah, you're right. Before we get into all these various topics, I do want to take a second to congratulate all the area seniors that are going to be graduating this year, including the young lady that was just here. It's a great time. It's a it's a measure of their intelligence to be able to do the work to graduate. Let's hope that intelligence translates into being smart. It's a very scary time of year. All kids have cell phones, and please use them. Be smart, be safe, and again, congratulations on behalf of all of us.
Thank you, Brian. Carol?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank everybody who came out on all of the issues that you've come out on tonight. We meet an awful lot of the time with nobody in the back of the room, and it is very nice to have people come out. I wanted to say a word about our motives. There are a bunch of issues that are hot-button issues tonight. None of us are going to vote unanimously on any of them. You know, we're not all going to agree. We're going to fall out in different ways on different issues. We have tough community decisions to make. It's why we're here. It's why we spend the hours that we do. There isn't a one of my colleagues, even with whom I disagree profoundly on some basic issues or some other issues that I don't respect and don't think has worked really hard to come to the positions they've come to. And I feel kind of that's true of the public that comes to us. And I just hope that you see us that way as well. We have many things that we hear about and learn about. For example, about roads that have to do with subsurfaces of roads and what happens when you don't maintain them, on government and what happens when you don't maintain democracy, on what other hot-button issues do we have, on districting and how we break down in terms of districting. Our motives are all good, and I hope that we can all treat each other with a tone, both in our writing, as we hear from people, and as we talk to each other, that understands that we're all doing the best that we can to juggle issues and come down on different sides. I will say, for those people, we have spent a lot of time on Pine Tree. Thank you all for coming out. For those of you who didn't make it to yesterday's meeting, which is one of many that we've had where we, I think, have made a good opportunity available, I did distribute a memo. It is public. Request to our highway staff and our administration to do a serious study, come back to us with what it would take to do a very serious study of the residential portion of Pine Tree Road. I was going to talk about that under my F&I report, but I wanted to do it. I know that we're a little far down on the agenda, so I wanted to do that while there were people still in the room. I'll ask John Lampman maybe, or Jeff Smith, to make sure that is sent out to the residents' list, the people who've been following this issue, so they see what it is that I've asked for.
And that's in our folders on the left side.
And all the legislators have that in your folders. I apologize to the public and to the residents of that area that it has taken us probably more years than we should have to come to an understanding of the ways in which the current issues are bad enough that we ought to be studying them now and not wait for some future problems that may or may not happen depending on future decisions. That's mostly our airport. Also, you know, there's an airport resolution that a lot of you may not agree with me on that I'm going to, you know, again, it's the tone that we do this with that I'm asking that people understand and the respect for each other's positions. Thanks.
Thank you, Harold. Jim?
Thank you. For anyone who's listening, I will give my own motives for why I do things. And my motive for doing this is the fact that Dustin Brown was born and raised in Ithaca, New York. He played hockey for Ithaca High School for 98, 99, and 2000. He's the captain of the Los Angeles Kings, and they won the Stanley Cup. And his mother-in-law and father, mother-in-law is from here, and he was interviewed on the Jay Leno show, and Jay said, "What are you going to do with the cup?" He said, "I'm going to take it back to Ithaca. It's a small town. They should love it." I sincerely hope he does that, and at that time, the county legislature will give an appropriate response to him being in the area. But I thought it was pretty cool that young man, captain of the team, only the second American captain of a National Hockey League Stanley Cup, is from here.
Thank you, Jim. That is certainly exciting. Leslin.
Okay. This must know that I have a lot to say tonight because it's not staying up. I thought you were going to say we're going to have a parade, Jim. It's the call for parades every time somebody wins something. Anyhow, Brian, thank you for the shout-out to our seniors. I have one of those. Yay. Proud mommy. Who's graduating tomorrow. So, and I did not commit any crimes against him. Making it. I have a couple of things, but I want to preface the good thing I'm going to talk about with some of the ridiculous comments that people make in our community when good things are happening. People hide behind anonymity in some of the areas where they can chat online or on the newspaper and say things that are downright racist, bigoted, prejudiced, hurtful, and very, very, very frightening. And I hope that in our community that our citizens are better about uniting for things that are good in our community, uniting for things that are about hope and are about justice, social justice in our community. And now here's the good news. This Friday, the City of Ithaca, the Downtown Ithaca Alliance, the City of Ithaca, are very proud to be unveiling Ithaca's very own Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Sculpture on the Commons. It is, here we go again. It will be installed at the, I'm not sure if it's Cayuga Street end of the Commons. So there will be a ceremony at 11:30. We try to do it over the lunch hour in the day. A sculpture that honors Dr. King, a sculpture that honors his legacy, and one that we hope sort of represents our hope for justice and unity for everyone in our community, whether you live here or you come to Ithaca to visit. So that will happen at 11:30 on the Commons on Friday, the 22nd, and everyone is invited to be there. It's going to be a lovely affair. So we can have a nice big one in Washington, D.C., and we can have our own here in Ithaca, New York, because that's how we roll, according to Betty White. The other thing is the following day, the 23rd, is the celebration of Juneteenth here in Ithaca. Today, June 19th, is Juneteenth. Juneteenth, for those who may not know, is the oldest known celebration of the final emancipation of slaves, some 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was issued. Slaves in Galveston, Texas, and some of the places in the South did not know that they had been emancipated. No one told them. They continued to work. And finally, word through General Granger got to them during the teen days of June, the final plantations got their word on June 19th, hence the celebration of Juneteenth. That is happening on the 23rd, Saturday the 23rd, a celebration of Juneteenth, which includes a street festival outside of the community, the Southside Community Center, 305 South Plain Street. So I hope to see you all there passing through and enjoying the festivities and the education around what Juneteenth is all about. I preface my announcements with the comments I made because just I try that. If this thing stays up, it's got issues against women. That's what I'll say. I tried that. It didn't work. I made the comments I made earlier because there are these two celebrations, and it was unfortunate to read for someone printed off for me some very ugly comments someone made about the Juneteenth celebration and depicted that ended in things like, we hope that, you know, the thugs who will be there die like Rodney King. It's a kind of ugliness that we don't need in our community. We've been doing well. We have things that raise their heads and then they die down. But if people really understand the true history behind why some of these things happen, why these celebrations happen, and can accept and respect all of us as human beings, that those of us who are really close to those celebrations, because it's part of heritage for us, will not feel that kind of hurt. So I'm appealing to our community to come out, to celebrate, and when you see these comments, especially and the newspapers are where online, that you flag them so that they will be removed, because I don't want to keep seeing them over and over again. So the good news is we're celebrating American culture, because it's a part of American culture, not just a part of African American culture, it's a part of American culture, and I'm inviting everyone to join us as we do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
Leslie, could you mention the time of the sculpture dedication again, please?
It's at 11:30 a.m. On the Ithaca Commons, the Cayuga Street end of the Ithaca Commons.
Thank you. We've got Frank Dooley and then Pat.
Thanks, Martha. While not as prestigious as the Stanley Cup, nonetheless, the kids from Trumansburg placed 26th in this part of the United States with regard to the Envirothon. Remember, they won our region, and they did very well. It's the first time we've ever been at the level that they were at, and they did very, very well, and we should be very proud of them. I asked Craig Scott, who's the director of Soil and Water, if he could bring them here at some point. Last 2 years ago, we gave them the Distinguished Youth Award because they did so well, but they did not achieve this level 2 years ago. But I thought that it was would be nice to recognize them, since we're recognizing a lot of young people tonight. Thought you'd like to hear that. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Julie.
Well, there's something else that's happening on Saturday, the 23rd, but I don't think it needs conflict. Stewart Park, planting by the Memorial Flagpole. The Ithaca Garden Club and the Friends of Stewart Park will be out there planting, and people are invited to come help them plant or just cheer them on. It's nice to see Stewart Park restored. 9 to noon this Saturday.
Thank you, Julie. Pat.
I want to apologize, Leslyn, for the commotion over here. On
it's all
this
right.
Side when you were speaking, we just had a little minor accident over here, so I'm really sorry that it may have distracted from your comments. And I also want to say that it pains me to hear that a celebration that you were talking about has had such kind of derogatory comments yeah. made about it. It's certainly not deserving, and I don't think that it represents the majority of people in the way they feel.
No. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pat. Mike and then Peter.
This is a little bit off the wall, but I thought I'd plant the seed early here. And that is, Tompkins County was created by the state legislature and named for Daniel Tompkins, a very famous governor of New York State, who his efforts helped us remain part of the United States of America instead of becoming part of Canada during the War of 1812. And that was done in 1817. And that's just 5 years from now will be its bicentennial of our county. And I don't think it's too early to start thinking about that and how we might commemorate that and Governor Tompkins in the future. And as we proceed, we don't want to wait till 2017 to come up with some ideas for that. I just wanted to mention it early on. Let's think about it.
That's a very good idea, Mike. Thank you. And then Peter.
Yeah, first off, Leslyn, it was my fault. I want you to know that what I did was spill a whole cup of coffee over the table and all the papers. Pat was kind enough to help me clean it up. I'm sorry. It wasn't deliberate, believe me. I never quite know what to talk about here, and I generally never prepare anything, but I did want to share with you something that an experience I had, which was a very, I don't know, an experience that I thought was wonderful, and I just wanted to share it with you. I don't know how many of you saw an op-ed piece by George Will in the Ithaca Journal maybe half a week ago, where he attacked viciously, I thought, elementary school teachers, and in particular the elementary school teachers in Montgomery County and the Bethesda Elementary School for being Democrats and trying to do politics in the classroom and so forth. It was obviously to me that I love George Will, particularly when he's writing on baseball. There's no one better, but when he's writing on politics, I often disagree with him. But the thing that offended me particularly was the attack on elementary school teachers. But just before reading the article, Irene and I took a trip down to Montgomery County, the same place where Bethesda Elementary School was, to visit another elementary school a couple of miles away from it, the Sligo Creek Elementary School, because our youngest grandchild was graduating from the fifth grade, and there was a graduation ceremony. And I have traditionally, I've never been to a fifth grade graduation ceremony, and typically I have sneered at the notion and imagined them in cap and gowns, and the whole thing was ridiculous. But I went down there. I was profoundly moved by that graduation more than any other graduation I had ever been to. And I believe me, in the course of my lifetime, I've been to lots of graduations. Then what I saw was to me how wonderful an elementary school can be. The the whole way it was put together, where all the classes in the elementary school had a role to play in this graduation, there was clearly a sense of what I took to be patriotism, defined for an 11-year-old child, namely pride in their own institution and commitment to their own institution. I saw children march in, 75 children marched in, a cross-section of the future of America, just all colors, all kinds of dress, the sneakers, and girls that were on the way to being young women in high heels, and girls that weren't quite on that same way in Mary Janes, and just wonderful little boys in suits and ties, and little boys in sneakers and shorts, and the diversity in every sense of America was clear in that. And what I listened to was, it was long and boring, okay? For an hour they gave awards to various students for doing well, for trying hard, for improvement, for work in the school, to help the school. And I sat in that classroom, and by God, those children applauded equally for all of them. There was a sense that they belonged to something. And there was, I went through and I heard the principal give the lecture, and the lecture was the kind of thing that I think conservatives like to hear. It was a lecture that talked about a moral code. They all talked about choices that they had made and choices that they will make. And they talked about the future and what the future lay for them. I was so moved. I came there with a camera to take pictures of our granddaughter. I ended up taking a picture of every child as they came in. It was so moved. And I thought to myself, by God, I've seen the future of America, and I feel good about it. So that's what I wanted to tell you.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much, Peter. Brian?
Thanks. And this isn't anywhere near that profound, but we really should give a shout-out. It's good that we're talking about sports again. We kind of took a little hiatus, and we should do that. And we should recognize the Lansing High School baseball team for winning the state title, and I believe that they were undefeated throughout the year, which is very, very difficult to do. And in the state semifinal and final, they were down and came back to win them both. So I congratulate them. That certainly doesn't happen every day. Great baseball town, too, by the way.
Great. Well, that's a lot of stuff. Anyone else? All right. I don't know if I can be that interesting or profound or whatever, but I have a few things to do. Let me first do the WIB appointments to the Workforce Investment Board, Alan Bishop and Leslie Marie Leonard. Okay. I want to remind people that a week from today is the primary election in New York State. Now, statewide, that's the Republican, have three people for U.S. Senate, and locally we have primary in the Congressional District. Polls are open noon to 9, right, Steve? Noon to 9, okay. And if you aren't going to be here, you can get an absentee ballot if you call 274-5522. Or go to votetompkins.com, which I did today because I'm going to be out of town next week. So, I wanted to bring up the date a little bit on the elected officials to protect New York. Most of you signed a letter that asked, call on Governor Cuomo to delay a decision on hydrofracking in New York State until we had additional studies completed, which gaps in our knowledge were identified, and we feel that more work needs to be done. Since then, two things have happened. It seems that his administration has leaked a plan. It seems a plan to that they're working on to allow hydrofracking in 5 counties in New York State: Steuben, Chemung, Broome, Tioga, and Shenango. So if you look at the map, that's pretty much a horseshoe around Tompkins County. With Cortland, then Tompkins, then Schuyler as sort of the middle of that horseshoe. So this definitely affects us. So I'll be going to Albany tomorrow to speak along with representatives of many other groups that are asking the governor not to have an experimental, you know, an experimental zone in Tompkins County, in New York State, that if fracking is safe, it's safe for everybody. If it's not safe, it's not safe for anybody. It's basically the point, and that the science really is not there. So I will be speaking on behalf of the elected officials group, which now numbers 320 local elected officials from 37 different counties around the state. And you can see the whole list at nyelectedofficials.org. So that's my report. Any questions? Thank you. Joe Mariana, County Administrator.
I think in the interest of time, I'm going to go really short tonight. I'm going to delete all but one item on the list. I think many of you know this already. This relates to our favorite invasive species, hydrilla. There is a plan to treat for hydrilla beginning on the 26th of June. If that happens, and it will happen unless weather is a problem, the inlet will be closed for about 48 hours. The work is going to be done during the week, not a weekend, to minimize the impact on recreational boating. But it does look like the first treatment, the herbicide treatment, will occur on or about June 26th. I think most of everything else I'll talk about relates to agenda items, so I'll stop there.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Any questions? Pat?
Joe, is there any update on the money from Hydrilla that we're looking to the state for?
Well, there was a meeting about a week ago with DEC. And I guess the best way to explain it at this point, Pat, and Martha could probably help me, is that the state is taking money from various sources to be able to cover costs as those costs arise. So they're working very hard right now to take money that's available, I think it's through FLOPUP, and put it into this initial spraying. There may be some other money that's available up front to do the spring or early summer spray. There's a lag, and they've indicated that the $700,000 that was in the state budget for us is still for us. They need a written confirmation from the Senate that it is for us. We expect that to be forthcoming, and that'll be the source of subsequent treatments. So that's how they will pay for subsequent treatments. Long term, there's still an issue. Can they sustain this level of funding? But I think they're doing a pretty good job trying to cobble things together to get the treatment done that we need done this year.
And I would just to add that there were a series of meetings last week with a lot of different people, including Ken Lynch from Region 7 DEC and the two from Albany. And they met with staff in one meeting, a long detailed meeting, and then with leadership of the city and some of the rest of us. They are looking at the whole thing comprehensively with dredging and with water quality issues for the southern end of Cuga Lake. I think for the first time, they're really looking at it comprehensively. So I think there's, you know, we have to be a little bit patient about the bureaucracy releasing the money, but we think things are going to be working in the right way. Pam?
I don't know, Joe, if you can answer this question, but the question I have is the assumption that all of this time, all of this month since the warm weather has arrived and boats have been going in and out of the inlet, the flood control channel, that there has been no hydrilla available to attach itself to boats to take out into the lake? I mean, was it still at a dormant stage until now?
I am the wrong person to
ask that question. Okay, I'll find out the answer.
I'd love to try,
okay.
But it wouldn't be worth the whole thing. So okay. I'll stick with the money.
Okay, thanks.
Anybody else want to? Yeah. Dooley, you want to take a stab?
No, it's there.
Okay, all right, Jim, and then Dooley.
It's there. I've seen it. You know, I have a boat, and I've been down the channel, you know, many times. It's there. I haven't seen anyone taking it out, driving away with it, but, you know, it's there.
That's a good question, Pam. Call Roxy, I guess.
No, I will follow up on that question.
Yeah. Dooley?
You mentioned coordination between hydrilla treatment and dredging, and that reminded me that there is a draft EIS that's finally been issued, draft FEIS. I hope that there will be some period of time for people to comment on it, and I don't know, before any finding statement is released, do you have any information about the schedule for that?
I'm even the wronger person to ask about that. I'm sorry, I don't know.
Well, I thought you were at meetings, and I thought you might have heard something.
That level of detail we didn't talk about. I'm sorry, Dylan. Frank?
Thanks, Martha. At the Water Resources Council meeting on Monday, Craig Scott reported that the first $380,000 was received. And it sort of follows up on what Joe was saying. That money is going principally for the treatment later this month, and some will be held back. He's signed three contracts to proceed with that. Joe's right. The $775,000 is being reviewed, if you will, for distribution purposes at the through the DEC. There may be one or two other entities that have to enter that fray. There's another federal piece. One is $65,000, I was told, and one was $40,000 that is supposed to go for the education piece where we're working with Bill Foster and the floating classroom. He's agreed to do some of the outreach. Sharon Anderson and the network, it's through Cooperative Extension, but the Lake Network group is preparing some outreach to all of the marinas, the yacht club, up and down the lake and whatnot, so there's enough outreach there. The money, it's really a mix and match, and it's beginning to approach $1 million with all of the various pieces. What we were told on Monday, and to reiterate what Joe mentioned, pardon me, the DEC is waiting for the legislature, not just the Senate, but the Assembly, to confirm in writing, as if they haven't confirmed it 10 times already, something that will permit them to proceed with the distribution of the funds. Tonight at the library, Sharon Anderson is conducting All You Ever Wanted to Know About Hydrilla meeting. It started, I believe, at 6 o'clock. I have two websites that came through our efforts through the Water Resources Council, and one is hydrilla.com. The Education Committee of the Water Resources Council has been pretty active. Roxy Johnson has been a real stalwart in this, believe me, along with Craig. And I'd be happy to get you the websites, Martha, so that you can get them distributed. But the planning department has a lot of information on this, and we'd like to make it as accessible to the general public as we can. We did ask Roxy on Monday to break the funding down so that we have a list of what money is expected from which entity. So that once and for all, Pat, we ought to know who's committed to send what, because it's been a little bit of a crapshoot as to what you could do when. And the first application of the pesticide is supposed to take place before the end of this month.
All right, why don't we, I can ask Roxy Johnson or maybe Sharon or somebody to maybe do a presentation, an update for us at a meeting in the near future. I think it might be a good time for them to come back.
Why don't you ask the Water Resources Council to do that?
Great. Okay, Frank. Do you want to do that? Do you
sure.
want to bring that? Okay.
I'll ask Roxy and Sharon.
Thank you. Okay. All right. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
I just wanted to briefly, I know you all heard from at least one resident on Hanshaw, so I just wanted to update people on what was going on with the residents on Hanshaw. About a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, we sent a letter to the people who we've yet to reach an agreement with. If you may recall, there were 97 or 98 property owners on Hanshaw. So far, we have agreements with all but 9 of them. And we sent a letter to those with whom we did not have an agreement, which at that time was slightly more than the 9. indicating that we were going to proceed in the next, this week actually, with an eminent domain proceeding, just so that they would be aware, and if they wanted to agree, it would be good to do so before we began the proceeding. So I expect either tomorrow or the next day we'll file an eminent domain proceeding with regard to those parcels which we don't have an agreement with. There are 9 homeowners, like I say. I believe 5 or 6 of them is because they're against the project or against eminent domain, and the others, it's just personal things like haven't gotten in to sign the papers, that kind of thing. So that's where we stand. I expect that within the week we'll file a proceeding. And the proceedings are really, they should go fairly quickly, I hope. You have to give a certain amount of time, but the only issues that really could be raised are whether it's a public purpose and whether the county followed proper procedures, and we already have a court decision saying that we did that. So that's to update on what's going on.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. Are there any questions? All right, David had to leave. So I will go to ask for resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda. Jim.
Yes, I would like to add, it's on your desk. It is supporting Senate Bill 5629B and Assembly 6575. It is a law that, or we're supporting the law that is now in the Assembly to give the ability to counties to raise their 4% sales tax without going back every 2 years asking for permission. And I think I've gotten that close to right.
Okay, seconded by Brian. All in favor of adding this to the agenda for tonight? Please raise your hand. Opposed? 1. That passes 12-1, so that'll be on, Frank. That'll be on under your report, Jim, under the Budget Committee. Yeah, okay, thank you. Anything to be withdrawn? All right, I'll read through the consent items and let me know if you want anything pulled off. Resolution A, budget adjustments, various departments. Resolution B, authorization for public hearing, Tompkins Courtland Community College operating budget 2012-2013. Resolution C, authorization to participate in Onondaga County's contract for furnishing police vehicles. And Resolution D, supporting the community prescription drug discount card program. Is there a motion? Moved by Pat, second by Carol. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. So thank you. With the order that I discussed before, I'd like to have folks turn to packet page. Julie, do you have it right on hand? I'm not sure. Go to the redistricting issue.
34?
Packet page 34?
Maybe.
Okay. Packet page 34, and you have a map and memo in your folder, red folder as well. At last, the meeting 2 weeks ago.
What? I don't have a map.
You don't have a map?
Well, I don't think I have the right map.
What? Left-hand side of your folder. Is it folded the other way so the map is on the inside?
What does it say at the top?
There's a memo from Hank DeLay, Henrik DeLay, and then the map is folded like this so you just see white. You don't have it? Okay. 2 weeks ago, we had a discussion of, I think, more than an hour about these issues, and it was timely and complicated, and we had members of the city, Ellen McAllister from the city. I don't know whether anybody remembers that, but I asked you to remember what you'd said so you didn't have to say all the same things again. So with that, I know there have been quite a lot of developments since in the last 2 weeks, but I do want to urge folks that we have a long agenda with a lot of things that the public is interested in. So if we can try to be crisp, if we can. So yes, Julie.
Okay. The County Redistricting, Independent Redistricting Commission has met yet once more, and it's really exciting to see Hank DeLay here tonight because I thought he was going to be in Albany, but his plans are extremely flexible. I'd like to say why he was supposed to be in Albany, and he still will be. He's been nominated to be on the SUNY Board of Trustees, I guess it's called. So that's a great honor, but I'm glad you can be here tonight anyway, that you didn't have to leave. And I would ask that Hank report on behalf of the commission, and also let you know that Greg Potter is here prepared to project the map that Hank is going to talk about, but Greg can also show other maps if that really is what you want. And after this, I hope that we will have a very brief discussion of what is titled a possible substitute resolution, because what was forwarded from the last meeting of the legislature is not strictly speaking relevant anymore. So, Hank, please.
Thank you very much, Julie. I'll try to be brief as well. As we talked about this subject 2 weeks ago, you recall that the Independent Redistricting Commission, and I will just momentarily take a break and say I'm delighted to be accompanied this evening by both Margaret Hobby and Mike Hattery, other members of the commission. We submitted our report to you on February 22nd, in which we recommended a 14-member legislature, four of those members coming from the city of Ithaca. Simultaneously, the city of Ithaca had a redistricting committee that was functioning, looking at the ward structure for city government, and in middle of April, April 19th, I believe, the city redistricting committee recommended to the common council a four-ward proposal. The independent redistricting commission of the county then met and revised our original proposal to you so that we would be in concert with the recommendation for four wards by the city committee. That went forward to Common Council, and as you heard 2 weeks ago, the Common Council set aside that particular proposal from the City Redistricting Committee. The Common Council then decided to continue to discuss two alternatives at their meeting on June 13th. One of those alternatives was what they refer to as Map 4-6, the map that we had essentially adopted as our substitute recommendation to you in April. The other was a proposal for five wards. And after extensive discussion within Common Council, they decided to go with a five-ward proposal. Now, that's fine. That's their, judgment. That presents, however, a significant issue for how the county districts that we are recommending relate to those five wards. And the proposal that we had amended and given to you in April, reflecting the work of the City Redistricting Committee, presents lots of problems. In fact, there are, under that scheme, there would be over, I believe the total is 9 so-called sliver districts within the city of Ithaca, areas where there would not be clear overlap between the city and the county lines. This then, in a sense, was making no sense for the county commission to be recommending that proposal to you, since it wasn't our original proposal to begin with, and now the city didn't go with that either. So we reconvened the members of the county commission last evening, reviewed our original proposal. We unanimously recommended that we withdraw our amended version of a 14-member map that was given to you in April. That map was called 14C version 5. We went back to our original proposal, map 14C version 3, and then looked at what could be done to reduce the very small pockets of overlap, which are far fewer under our original proposal, pockets of overlap with the five wards. And we were able to do that. We reduced the number from 6 to 4, eliminating sections of the city which would have, for instance, like only 7 voters in the area, or I think in another instance, 191 voters. It makes it a much, not only is it a much more efficient proposal for purposes of the Board of Elections and administering elections, but it also has the benefit of reducing the overall deviation for districts countywide from our original map version 3, which had a deviation of 9.88%, to under the revised version 3, 8.90%. So that's a move in the right direction. At the same time, it's becoming more efficient. I believe you have in front of you map 14C version 3, parenthesis revision 1, and that is the proposal for lines that was unanimously adopted by the Independent Redistricting Commission last evening. And with that, I'll stop and see if you have any questions.
Thank you very much, Hank. Appreciate it. Go ahead.
I forgot to point out that one of our election commissioners is here.
You're
both. I can't see them.
Elizabeth's right behind you.
You're both here. Okay. I wasn't sure if they would be here or not, and I should acknowledge your presence, so if people want to ask you questions, they can do that, too. If no one else has questions for Hank, I guess I'd like to ask Greg to come up and show us the details of how the little lines were changed within the map the commission first had recommended to us.
This may take a moment to turn off. So if there are any other questions in the meantime or any further discussion while I...
Well, let me direct your attention to a substitute resolution, L, which attempts to bring the chronology up to date from where we were at the last meeting. And there is a line drawn through which says resolved on recommendation of the Government Operations Committee, because the Government Operations Committee has not met to consider this version either. So we will have to figure out what we will do later this evening with respect to whether we send it back to GO or vote on it tonight. Greg?
Okay. What I will do is walk you through the maps that were referenced leading up to last night's discussion and decision from the Independent Redistricting Commission. The first map is on the left side of the screen here, which is the version of the City of Ithaca 5 district wards, which were approved by the City of Ithaca Common Council. And those lines were then used and transposed over the map, which is on the right-hand side of the district, which the preferred 14C version 3 that the commission chose to start with. I'm going to zoom in just briefly here on the map to explain a little bit about some of the areas of overlap or what Hank was referring to as sliver districts. In the initial discussion last night, we identified 6 of those district areas along with the populations with each one of those. And those are the hatched areas, which are labeled A, B, C, D, E, and F. Of those district areas, there were 2 areas, the one labeled B and the one labeled E, which were modified to produce the next version of the map, which is before you this evening, which is the 14C V3 revision 1. By doing so, the county boundaries then better correlated with the City of Ithaca ward boundaries and also reduced the 2 smallest sliver districts, which would have caused inefficiencies in future elections within the city of Ithaca. So as an example, the District B, it had a population of 376 based on the 2010 census data, and the District E, which is this area right here between Court Street and Farm Street and Cascadilla Creek running through the center here, had a population of 447 individuals.
Greg, where are the lines of B?
I'm trying to figure it
out. One moment. The lines of B is an unusual area in that it reflects just one census block along West Avenue, which are dormitories on campus at Cornell.
Those are essentially the old acre dorms on West Campus of Cornell.
So the next, the change that was then...
And you're moving them from which to which?
I'll display that next. So the change that was reviewed last night moved this E area here into the downtown area or the Legislative District 4, which is now known, I'll show that, and the B area was moved into the Legislative District 5. So it was just a swap between the two, which better balanced both the statistical approach towards redistricting as well as better correlated with the City of Ithaca ward boundaries. Okay, so let me now shift to the next versions here. So in effect, to the right, to the left is where we started, which was the original 14C V3, version 3, and to the right-hand side over here are the slight modifications or the revisions, with the two changes which I just mentioned. The one change being the area, this boundary right here, this block here being shifted into District 4, and the other block, census block here, individual census block being shifted from 4 into Legislative District 5. Those are the two changes that resulted from last night's discussion, and the end product of this is only four areas of overlap that need to be addressed specifically in the future by the Board of Elections, all which have very reasonable populations and would not lead to any great inefficiencies in the elections process. But I'll let Steve and or Elizabeth speak to that if they want to address it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Greg. Questions for Greg first. No question. Oh, okay. Pam.
Well, I just my general comment in reaction to this is that I mean, seeing these things up on the wall is well and good, but I can't make a decision on these changes just looking at it like this. I mean, I feel very strongly that we need to take this back to GO and go through this as we by our usual process. This is a major change, and it's a change that I think we should do carefully, and we are in no gigantic hurry on this. So that's my general comment.
Okay, Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Pam, I want to put you on the spot. At the last meeting, you were describing what was then the original proposal that night that was changed a little later in that evening. And you indicated, and I'm going to just refer to them by color, the pink color and the one on the right seem to run down towards the bottom of the...
North-south.
Yeah. And I think the on the wall in back of Joe and Dooley, that map is still up there, 14C-V5. You indicated that that version seemed to... provide more of a diversity of population. I know you want to send this back to GO, but for the purpose of discussion right now, can you comment at all on whether this version accomplished, whether the version we have in front of us accomplishes some of that now?
Well, I can't really totally, because I can't look up here and see well enough what we're talking about. I mean, maybe I need a different set of glasses, but it just it's a hard way to try and figure out whether this is what we want. And so I would just rather not go into it at this point, Frank. I'd be happy to talk about it at another point.
Okay. Thank you.
Peter.
This is a very difficult situation to be in. I really don't understand the significance of the changes that have been made. And I had a long conversation with my colleague across the room over the telephone where she was telling me what was the matter with this new map, and I just plain couldn't follow the conversation. And so and this is important, that's the other thing. And so that makes me want to delay. But then there's something on the other side, namely that we set up an independent commission, and the independent commission put together a map, and we asked them to eliminate sliver districts, and apparently that the number of sliver districts in the city, you know, the mismatch between the legislative and the city council borders has been minimized, and we have made the difference between voting areas, reduced that to the extent possible. And the other things that we're talking about, I think, are things that were never put in to the instructions that we gave to the independent committee. To I don't know what they are, but my guess is it's equalizing a mean income in the various areas, or something to do with students, or something like that. But those were not issues that we asked this group to investigate. So I'm not quite sure what sense it makes to delay and ask them to think about it while we have nothing for them to think about. That they've thought about what the criteria that we asked them to, and this is their answer. And I don't feel comfortable being, I mean, even if they're right, what you're saying, I'm still not comfortable coming in at the end of the process and saying, hey, we gave you instructions, but I don't really like what's come out of them. With the best intentions of the world, we're going to make a different map. I think it's hard to sell that. And so I honestly haven't heard, I'm sympathetic to what you say, it's hard to figure out what to do, but I don't see that the independent commission is going to do anything different if we give it more time. Now, if I'm wrong, if they say, no, they really ought to, you know, they want to take another look, they don't want to be rushed so much, I'm fine. I'm fine with giving them as much time as they need it. But without that kind of a statement coming from them, I'm really don't think I can vote for delaying.
Okay, a lot of hands. Hold on. I've got Brian, Leslie, Jim, Pam, Mike, Carol, Dooley. Did I get that right? But wait a second. Brian, Leslie, Jim, Pam, Mike, Carol, Dooley, right? Is that what I said? Brian.
Thanks. And actually, I want to commend all the parties involved. How you came up with this that quickly is quite impressive, I believe. What I really want to know is, throughout this whole process, and let's say this is the end result, is there anything in this as far as slivers that would do anything to census blocks that would result in a challenge? Or are these entire blocks that have gone to another, I hope?
No adjustments were made to any census blocks. They've okay. been used in their original format presented by the U.S. Census Bureau.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Leslie?
So this, I'm going to expose my ignorance here. Now, this has been probably one of the hardest things for me to follow and understand what's going on. But what I do know is what looks like War II, that was part of the city, that is part of the city, now includes what was Ward 1, but is no longer. Am I following that right?
Yes, that is correct. So in the process of moving from 15 to 14
right.
legislative districts, a decision was made to start with numbering sequence of District 2.
From 2?
Yes.
Okay.
And that is represented, Leslyn, as the yellow area on the western half of the city of Ithaca, all contained completely within the city of Ithaca.
So right now, the representatives on this body for the city of Ithaca that represent that current yellow area are Carol and I? Oh, Pam and I.
No. Yes. I mean, I would be in 3 in the future, but now I represent part of what is 2, West Hill,
right.
The south end of the city. But you would represent all of that yellow area in this map.
Thank you. I have a few more questions, but go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll come back if you want. Jim?
Let me say I appreciate all the work that people have done to get us to where we are. And I think someone already has mentioned it, Peter, that we were concerned about sliver districts. By this drawing, have cut down those numbers, made it more efficient for the city to operate. And neither here nor there would me if the city wants to have 5 wards or not. And frankly, I would like to vote on this evening because we have other parts of it that we have to do later on, and it makes sense that we can do that this evening.
Thank you, Jim. So we've got Pam, Mike, Carol Dooley, and I'll put myself in after Dooley. Pam.
Well, I guess that Peter was talking about the fact that the commission has given us the word and that we should follow it, and I think that generally that is true. But the commission has given us 3 different versions of the word, and so it's not as if it's been one thing written in stone. We've already made changes, and so I don't completely buy that, and perhaps we will end up this. Maybe this is where we want to be. But we have not gone through our process. I mean, I'm on the GO committee. I feel that I have had a role in this, have paid attention to it, and that I need to understand it as well as I can to make as the best decision that I possibly can. And I feel as if we're taking a shortcut in our process by not sending it back to GO. It may come back as in the same way as I just said, but it is a process that I believe is important for us to follow. So I really would hope that people would at least respect our process and send it back to GO so that we can look at this piece.
An informational question. Dooley, the way the original resolution is written, it says that the staff is to come back to prepare a local law to implement the new boundary lines. Am I right that the local law then would go through GO, right?
Well, I would think so, but you never know.
Well, the expert's nodding. So, in other words, it doesn't skip. That step goes back to GO. Okay. I've got Mike, Carol, Dooley, and myself.
I hope that we pass this resolution tonight with a substitute. We still have the part of the process that's missing here, and that's hearing from the public. And I think that's pretty important. And that's not going to happen until we propose a local law. What we're doing tonight really wasn't a part of the original charge to the commission and the resolution that this body adopted. This was kind of inserted to send this to us at this point. what the GO committee was supposed to do was to send us a local law, and then we would hold a public hearing on that local law. So, but we have this, and it's before us. We now have tried to be respectful of the city's process. The city chose differently. I'm sorry they did that the way they did. And it certainly was different than we heard the city was interested in going back to 2010 when we were first investigating and trying to work with that group in an intermunicipal kind of way. We need to move this along. The longer it goes, the less time we're going to have for people to prepare for the elections next year, to become familiar with the new districts that might be popping up, to make decisions about running or not running. And I think it needs to be out there. I think the public hearing process is pretty important. We respect what people say to us in public hearings. And so I hope that we just move this along, pass the resolution, and ask government operations to review and send forward the proposed local law to us for public hearing.
All right, Carol?
Yeah, you know, I'm often willing to add things to our agenda that came to us within a few days of our meeting. You know, I'm not one that says it had to have been on the original agenda, but I don't think it's possible for us to be able to reflect and understand a change in the maps that happened less than 24 hours ago. I came home last night and saw that there was an announcement from the commission. I appreciate the attempt to get together quickly and respond, but I went right on to the commission website to see what the new map was or looked for an attachment to that announcement with the new map, and there wasn't anything there. I was not near a computer today. You saw when I discovered that this was actually in our packet, folded up inside out, inside in. Even coming up, it's really hard to see. So I think we need more time to understand exactly what this change is and what the implication is. So I really hope that we're not going to act on this tonight. I do appreciate that the commission worked hard and had an obligation to balance many factors. Redistricting is always a compromise. There's always a set of compromises you have to make. There's no perfect solution. And the question is whether the compromises that we're making with whatever choices actually on the table, I guess this one, are the ones that are acceptable to a majority of us. And, we still have a map on the wall from last week. The commission has come out, had preferred alternatives along the way from different directions. I don't know if you noticed, if you watched along the way, they narrowed the choices. They had for a while a preferred 15-member choice and a preferred 14-member choice. We had a preferred choice a few weeks ago, and now we had another one. We had that one, and then that one, and then that one again. So for me, the question would be, back to the commission, if we want to make these compromises rather than those compromises, which ones would you recommend? Tell us, give us more of a report on the 15-member plan that you recommended, that you looked at along the way. We understand that you had choices. In the end, you had a top choice, but there were, what are these other choices? For me, the fact that you've now minimized the discrepancies and the dichotomy among the districts overall serves now, I think, and again on a quick look tonight, to only further worsen the dichotomy between what the city districts, how many people the city districts represent in each one, and the rest of the districts in the county. There aren't as many districts in the rest of the county where the representatives, where the legislators are representing quite as many people as in the city. and that weakens the voice of the people in the city. So for me, I would have preferred to see, and still would prefer to see, a 15-member choice, because I think, given where we're drawing the lines or in a fixed way around the city, well, let me say this. I think there are several ways to achieve balancing city representation with the rest of the county. One way would be to stick with a 15-member legislature, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. There was an error given to us in figures, I believe, the last time we talked about this. And again, I don't think there were any motives to the error. It's a quick, hastily done calculation that said that four city members of a 14-member legislature was actually a bigger percentage than five members. I'll give you the numbers.
Maybe
yeah.
600.
Yeah, four members of a 14-member legislature would be 28% of the legislature. Our current five members of 15 is 33% of the legislature. That balances the city interests and the various districts within the city. So for me, I think you could either stick with the 15 members, or you could take at least one of those city districts and say, we've got to go across the line and have one member represent the city and part of the town. So you'd stick with five and have members, several members, or one at least go across the lines. And that would be acceptable as well. I don't ask necessarily to be the person to say which district that should be. I would go back to the independent commission and say, give us that alternative, your choice to make. If we have to go to the 14-member legislature, among the four versions, I think the one we've got on the wall that was last week's preferred alternative would be preferable in terms of fair representation and active representation of the various city neighborhoods. And I think you're hearing that from a lot of the city representatives, regardless of which two people's houses happen to fit in the various districts. I think the way somebody mentioned the Baker dorms, those dorms are now very, very large. It's not the old Baker dorms. It's a whole new campus that is primarily sophomores. That means that it's people.
No particular census block.
Hank, can you go to the mic?
The particular census block that I referred to as the Baker dorms are literally just the Baker dorms.
The Baker dorms.
They are not the new West Campus dormitories.
Well, in any case, it is people who live in that address for 1 year and then move to another room. And then all the North Campus dorms are also people who live in an address for 1 year and then move. And so to achieve, particularly in what's now the pink area, a consistency of representation from people, somebody who stays in that address, and having a choice of people who are here long enough to run in a year and then serve for our 4 years, as opposed to the city possible shorter terms. There's just a lot to think about, and so I don't see that we can either adjust what we're doing tonight, and I would like us to factor in. As we make decisions on the county, there's an awful lot of the time where the response in many of our areas, whether it be social services or roads or various other items, where we are told we don't have to worry as a county about that item. The city does it for itself. The city has an office of that. The city gets to submit its own list of road projects to the state funding. But the city is part of the county. Because of our geography, we all come through the city a lot. And so I think you got to listen to the city reps who are saying this doesn't really work for our representation. So I hope that that we do something different than vote on this tonight. And if we do vote on something, I hope it is the one on the wall.
Dooley?
First, I want to tell you a little bit about Greg that I hadn't really appreciated until recently. Greg, with his particular affinity for GIS work, treated this whole exercise the way a chess master does. He thinks several moves ahead. And I was surprised that he could make line adjustments as quickly as he did. But I learned from him that he's been thinking about this all along and seeing how sliver districts could be minimized, moving a little piece of census block here or there. So I appreciate very much that kind of approach. I also think that Greg would be absolutely available to answer the detailed questions and why the commission went away from the 15-member one, what the difficulties were in constructing one where there was a half-city, half-town district. And maybe that's what you need to feel more comfortable with voting for something else. I don't think I want to ask Greg to do that tonight, though. I would rather have that happen in a committee if it goes back to committee. But a lot of this discussion reminded me of what I heard when I went to Common Council when they essentially rejected their independent committee's recommendation and voted 6-4 for 5 wards in the city. It not only made it easier in the sense that they didn't have to go to referendum because 5 wards are 5 wards, but they don't have to change anything in a major way, but a lot of the discussion hinged on permanent residents who vote versus temporary residents who aren't here very long and only really vote in presidential elections. And the argument for the majority that struck me as a little surprising was that you will have more actual voters if we keep 5 wards, especially representing wards 1 and 2, than if we went to 4. That they were thinking in terms of registered voters instead of population, which is what one person, one vote is supposed to mean. So this hearing the argument at the city was, to me, kind of depressing. But if we want to have that conversation also about the number of likely voters versus population, then I think we need to have that conversation, too. I didn't expect we would, but maybe we have to. So I guess that's all I need to say. I would prefer this to go to committee just to air these details. And my personal tendency is to give particular deference to county legislators who represent the city because they understand these lines much better than I do. So I would be happy to do that if it goes back to GO, but that's up to you all.
Okay, my turn, then Leslin. First, I want to ask, Hank, when did your commission start meeting?
We began meeting last summer, I believe in June. Last night's meeting was our 17th, including 4 public hearings. The map that you have before you was the subject of our final public hearings, version 3, and it produced substantial support from the public at the time we held those hearings in the library, and I forget what was our other location?
Town of Dryden,
right.
Thank you. I thought it's been a while that you've been working.
No, they met their February deadline.
Right. But this conversation's been in the public for a year now. I would like to point out that we're not adopting the maps tonight. If this goes to, if we get a local law based on this, we have to have something. So we are in the position of adopting maps for the sake of setting a local, drawing a local law, and then going to public hearing. And as is true of all of our public hearings, if we hear something from the public that convinces us that we've got to go back to the drawing board, we can do that. And I think it's appropriate to move this along because it is time. It feels like it's time to do that. The commission has taken the extra step of looking again at, you know, I think it was appropriate to wait for the city and to wait again for the city. And I think it's also appropriate to then revise our lines, trying to match as best we could to go with the city. However, I think at this point, Peter really said it right, that we had certain criteria in the charge. We said, these are the things that we find important, and these are what we ask you to consider. And they have come up with a map that meets the task. They're not split. It was a unanimous decision last night with only one person absent. I think they've answered the question that we asked them. And I think it's time that we say, okay, this is, after all of that consideration, this is their recommendation, and I believe it's time for us to move the process along. This is what it means to have an independent commission. If we weren't going to basically talk about giving deference, if we weren't going to give, I would say, great deference to the commission, we shouldn't have asked those folks to spend all that time doing this. If we were going to, at the end of the process, say, well, thanks very much, but I think we can do this better. So I think this is time. This doesn't mean we are adopting the maps. Pam, I see your hand. It doesn't mean we're adopting this map. We are moving this process along so that we give the public a formal, appropriate time to comment on what is the best thinking of the experts that we appointed and the people who know more about this than anybody, because that's what they've been doing for a year now. So I have had Leslin, and then I would like to go to Dave, who hasn't spoken yet, and then Carol, Dooley, and Jim. I'm sorry, Pam. Okay, Leslin, Dave, Pam, Carol, Dooley, and Jim.
Martha was right with you up until the, we shouldn't have people do all this work and then tell them no thanks. It's not like we haven't done it before, because of who we are, and we don't necessarily agree when we come to the end and we look at it and say, doesn't quite do what we thought it was going to do. So I see nothing wrong with saying that. I do appreciate the work of the commission. As goodness knows, I couldn't do it, because I couldn't tell you from head to tail what was going on. What I do know is, and I also don't like shell games. I hear you'd say about we're not adopting a map. But if we accept this resolution that's on the floor here for 14-member legislature with appropriately revised district lines, that tells me that there's some appropriately revised lines on a map somewhere that we're dealing with. So, let's just be real about it. What I'm concerned about, or what I'm hearing, is that there will be one less city representative on this body. Am I hearing that right? Was that a part of the charge that you referred to come back with a 14-member body, or this is what the Independent Redistricting Commission came up with?
Our charter says we can have a board with 11 to 19 members.
No, I understand what our charter says.
The charge said consider any number. And
Okay. Thank you.
But the task was very clear to minimize imbalance among the districts and to respect municipal boundaries.
Right.
Hank, am I missing it? If you want to refresh us briefly on other main criteria.
I was trying to look in my drawer because I thought I had it.
Well, you also asked us to have districts that were compact, contiguous. We have focused on looking at neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And of course, listen to the public. And the public came out and did share views with the commission, and we've taken those into consideration as well. The population was certainly the key. We had to meet the 10% standard, and we tried to do that with minimal disruption to existing municipal boundaries.
I need to.
Anything else?
Thank you. Hmm? So if I may ask Carol, and Carol, this is just a quick answer to something you said. Doesn't mean you take your turn. You said perhaps they may look at drawing a line somewhere that would include a sliver from someone else.
The town.
It will be the town. And part of what the charge was to try to avoid that. Having someone who's me represent city and a little piece of the town. Am I understanding that right?
Yes. In other words, it was for the sake of creating cross-municipal districts. That was not part of the charge. We all understand that there have to be some, and there are like five who do cross-municipal
right.
boundaries as it is.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay.
I'm done.
Okay. All right, I'm going to say Dave, Pam, Carol, Dooley, and Jim, and then I'd like us to take a break. We're clearly not going to vote, be ready to vote before we should really take a break. Okay? So we'll come back. Dave, Pam, Carol, Dooley, and Jim.
Okay. Appointed this commission to do a job to take into account all these things, and I think they've done a fine job, personally. If we want to change it and manicure it through the legislature, then it's as if they wasted their time, okay? So I think we really need to decide, do we trust these people to do the job that we asked them to do? And if we do, we should get on with it and make a vote. That's all.
Okay, Pam?
Yeah. Thank you. I just wanted to make clear to the Redistricting Commission that when I said when I was talking earlier about the fact that you had changed, that was not a criticism of your work. In fact, it was meant to be that you were willing to be flexible about what was needed for the changes. And I have nothing but admiration for your hard work and diligence in this. It's been a very long process, and I very much appreciate your hard work.
Thank you, Pam. Carol, Dooley, and Jim.
Yeah, I quickly correct. Well, when I gave those examples, I meant to say youth services, not, if I said social services, I misspoke. I want to be clear that I'm not suggesting that we sit here and draw any lines. The commission did excellent work going from an infinite number of possibilities, you know, and all the other people who've gotten it acknowledged, from an infinite number of possibilities to some smaller number to, I think, 15 or 16 to three or four among those, and then to two that we've gone back and forth between. It is not in any way that I'm suggesting that we sit here and draw lines. It is either take another one of their recommendations and or to ask them to, among the compromises that we find ourselves having to make here, reflect some more on which of their existing choices or the ones they looked at would best fulfill those objectives. And I will just answer Leslin in greater detail that we heard, as we created our charge, we heard from our small municipalities around the county a plea to put in the charge not to break them up.
Right.
So, you know, Groton shouldn't be broken up into two different districts or Caroline down the middle. But the city is itself made up of a bunch of districts. And I don't think that we understood quite the way that the charge was going to end up being interpreted in any way that what we, you know, that the lines that we now have that go across that city-town boundary in some places. You know, again, I heard that the town doesn't want as many people representing from the inside of their donut and the outside of their donut, but that didn't mean that we couldn't. So that given a chance to reflect on that, the commission may have a recommendation for us if they were asked to do so. I would really like to at some point, I don't want to cut off other people, but I would like to be able to have us consider sending this back, and I would like to move to, you know, to table it, but I don't want to do that and cut off the other people who were already in line.
And I
send
really
it back to GO. So should I move that?
I think the step here is well, we don't have anything on the floor yet. Can we
just
have
moved
two people
to send it back, and it got a second?
What? There's nothing on the floor.
There's an order too.
I've got Dooley and John. And
I'd like to move.
Jim.
Is the correct terminology is to table that resolution?
Well, there's nothing been moved. There's nothing to table.
Okay.
So let's have the two people who are already signed up, and then we go back to the committee chair because that's who makes the who brings forward the recommendation of the committee or whatever. That's where I would start after the break.
Martha, can I get in line? I just need to ask about the maps.
And then we're taking a break. Okay, Dooley, Jim, and Leslin.
You got to pee, sorry.
I am very much disinclined to ask the commission to start sending us what other than what they chose to recommend to us. That was the whole idea of the independent commission. I'm sorry I can't see myself supporting what you're asking for, Carol.
Julie, could you be a little closer to the phone, please?
Phone? Sure. What I do detect here tonight is that there are some of our members, legislators, who really want more time to feel comfortable with what we're being asked to vote on. And I guess I respect that to the extent that when it comes my time to move something, I will move to send this back to GO just to give more time for Greg to show maps if that's what people need, or for individual legislators to get down to look at the absolute streets and understand what this recommendation implies. And I'm willing to take time for that to happen. I think it's a bad feeling to be asked to vote on something that you don't feel you are comfortable with or understand. I personally will vote for what the independent commission recommends, but I am not a city resident, so I don't feel the strength of concern that I hear some of you feeling, and that's why I'm willing to take more time. That's all.
Jim, and then do it.
Okay. My question was going to be, how did we get this on the floor this evening? That's been answered. But even if it did get referred back to the committee, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that if you actually are going to respect what the commission has done and take their recommendation, I don't know what that time back in the committee would be. Mm-hmm. How would you spend that time talking about, you know, what street it is? I mean, that's sort of a waste of time for me. And I really wanted to, I wanted to be different and say to the commission, well, I'm not really pleased with your job because you haven't made it easy for us. But, you know, that would have fallen on deaf ears. No, actually, I think they've done a great job. And I truly would love to get this on the floor and vote for Resolution L this evening. So then the committee could do the local law they need to do and have the discussion that they want to have.
Leslin, and then we're going to take a break. So now come, you be first, Peter, after the break.
So I just want to ask a quick question. At our last meeting, when the commission came, Hank, if I understood right, you were saying that the commission's recommendation was C version 5, that one that's up there.
That's that's correct. The commission chose that,
right,
not as our original proposal, but right, to reflect what the city redistricting committee was recommending to Common Council.
Okay. Now, this new one is a little different, not just in the pieces that you showed on the map, but even like that pink one is configured a little differently. So did that pink one change because of what the city did recently?
We went back to our original proposal because the city rejected 4-5, that's correct.
So you went to C
version 3, which was our original proposal.
Which was your original proposal.
And that is now slightly amended.
Right, on the two little pieces.
Two little pieces in the context of the whole are very, very marginal.
I appreciate that because I didn't know this was under consideration before because this is what came to us last 2 weeks ago. So I've been looking at this one.
Right.
So I should have gone back to the original one. Thank you. That's all I needed to find
out. So this is the map. Just one more thing. This is the map you originally recommended out of your commission before the city.
That's correct. This is the map we recommended on February 22nd.
Okay. With those slight changes.
With the two very small changes to accommodate those slivers.
No, okay. No, y'all are confusing me again.
I'll explain it. But.
This is the map that you came last week or 2 weeks ago and said was recommended.
Yeah.
No, back in February they recommended version 14C, version 3.
And we took that away and brought this instead.
Well, I don't know what you're...
Commission, the City Redistricting Committee had voted for that one.
Thank you all very much.
Okay. We're going to take a 15-minute break. Please be in your seats at 5 of 8. Thank you.